Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Our discussion about the way in which this incredible heat wave is affecting our friends, their animal friends, that make up our life, also goes into an area that a lot of us really don't think about that much, unfortunately, and that is the fact that within our communities, we're surrounded by wildlife that we see on occasion, and most often at night when they start to come out. But, you know, during the day, they're trying to figure out how to cope with this heat, too. And joining us now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Laura Simon, the field director of the Urban Wildlife Program of the Humane Society of the United States. Laura, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you.
You have a very interesting specialization, and that is urban wildlife. Am I right? Do a lot of people really not pay as much attention as they ought to with these creatures that make up our neighborhood?
It's very true. I think people either don't pay attention to them, or when they notice them, they panic, because a lot of suburban and urbanites are not accustomed to the kinds of wildlife you see increasingly in urban and suburban areas. So people don't know much about their wild neighbors, and so they have a lot of questions and concerns, and they also run into conflict with them every once in a while. So we fill the gap by trying to teach people how to live with wildlife and how to understand them.
It's interesting you say that these animals seem to be appearing more often. What's the take on that?
Well, there's a lot of theories, but mine is that with the development continuing to gobble up more and more habitat, wild animals have fewer and fewer places to go, and they are forced into areas where there's high human densities. Plus, along the way, many wild animals become very adapted to humans and get used to living with us. They habituate to our presence and are happy to live in close proximity with us. So, for example, foxes, people see them out in the day, and the old thinking was, oh my goodness, if you see a fox by day, it's rabid. But red foxes in suburban areas are out and about by day all the time, and because that's when people put out cat and dog food. So they've adapted their behaviors, and it's very common and normal to see them out by day, but people don't know that.
Well, you know, I'm with you. I personally think it's important for us to learn to get along with this, with the urban wildlife, unless there's a reason not to.
Right.
But in most cases, these are gifts to us,
yes,
and they enhance our lives, and we should really, I think, make a much greater effort to become familiar with them, try to find them, and then give them the respect that they deserve. Most of them are really just trying to get along with us.
Exactly. And I wish more people had shared your perspective, because it's true. Animals are not out there to harm us or attack us. They're not dangerous. They're just trying to eke out a living like we do, and, you know, they're willing to be neighbors to us, and I think we have to become a little more neighborly.
Well, now, at times like this, when virtually almost everywhere in America, there is this phenomenal heat wave, what could you tell us about how these animals are having to cope with this change?
It's interesting, because wild animals are better adapted to deal with the heat. I mean, they're used to it. They're used to heat waves, and what they primarily do is just hunker down and get less active, and they make use of the water resources that are in their habitat. Even something like dew may become very important for animals at night. I mean, that may be their liquid nourishment. They also tend to switch over, if they can, to more liquefied foods like berries. And even insects have a very high water content for animals like raccoons. So they really conserve energy and they hunker down behaviorally. But we also encourage people to do things like, if you have birds in your backyard, which hopefully you do, you know, make sure you keep filling your bird bath. That's going to be important for the birds. And, you know, you can provide water, even the pond in your yard. You know, this is why we tell people it's really important to keep water bodies and streams in your neighborhood and not let development get rid of so many of these areas where there's water, because that may be the only water source wildlife has. And animals will take advantage of even the smallest little stream or puddle, and they get by. It's amazing how little water wild animals can survive on.
Obviously, if you see an animal, it's there because there's some sort of community. Almost always, it's because there is a successful community, so they've been able to figure out ways to meet their needs.
Exactly.
And as you say, in many cases, it's going to be some strange little pocket of water that they're aware of.
Right.
But
right.
At times like this, some of those as well may be disappearing.
Right.
Obviously, some people may decide that there's ways to assist. I don't really know what the best answer to that is. For example, let's say that you were concerned about coyotes that may be in your neighborhood. Is it appropriate to try to put out water or something like that? Give me a sense on that.
Yeah, I'm very mixed on that because even though it's a kind thing to do, which, of course, we want to be compassionate to our wild neighbors, It's also tough because when you put out food or water, you tend to attract animals, and it may become habit-forming. You start putting out food or water for them, and coyotes keep coming for food or water, and then they expect it to be there, and that may create a problem for the neighbors. But my personal feeling is in times of supreme heat, you know, where it's just unusually high heat levels or drought levels, you know, I think if you do provision a bit with water, do it for a very temporary time period and don't let it become habit-forming for the wild animals because then they might, you know, start coming around to areas where other neighbors might not appreciate them so much. But bird baths, we certainly say please keep those filled. And even most importantly, and this is a battle we continually fight, is don't put out traps. Don't put out humane traps. Don't put out any kind of trap to capture any animal at this time of year because they will literally die in the trap, and it's just the wrong thing to do. So if you need to rescue a wild animal like a skunk that fell in a window well, if you're going to do that, call us and we'll walk you through a fast way to get that animal out. But do not set any traps under any means because the most humane trap will quickly become a very inhumane trap.
Since this is your field, you have really interesting experiences and stories, I'm sure. I'm going to kind of let you go ahead and just share some of the thoughts that you think about at times like this, maybe some of the things that you're becoming aware of, because I would find that fascinating. Just go ahead and talk as you would.
Sure. Well, we had an interesting one when I was thinking about water and drought where these raccoons kept coming around to a house, and it was during a drought. And what they were doing is that the house, they had a leaky pipe in the house, and it was a perfect water source for these raccoons. But unfortunately, the homeowner got the leak fixed. I mean, that was fortunate for the homeowner, but not for the raccoons. And the homeowner called us and said, oh, my goodness, what's going on? There's a ruckus every night under my house. I hear screeching. And I had her hold up the phone, and I could hear that it was raccoons. And she swore up and down that, you know, she didn't put out food for them. And then I said, well, what could have been going on under your house that the raccoons were attracted to? And then we figured out it was, you know, she had this leaky pipe, and they had been really thoroughly enjoying it and using it. And but then suddenly she got it fixed, and that created a problem because the raccoons were so used to coming there for water, and suddenly that source dried up. So in that case, I did tell her, I said, put a pan out of water, and we'll slowly wean them from it. And, you know, she couldn't sleep at night, so she did. And then when the drought ended, the raccoons had other sources of water, and there was no more problem.
Oh, that's just fascinating. I'm intrigued by the fact that they were squawking about it.
Yeah. Well, it was the time of year when mothers had babies, and when they often, you know, the babies are very vocal. The parents, the mother is not. So the babies were just scrapping with each other. And what I imagine was happening is more than one mother was bringing her babies, and the babies were scrapping with each other, and that's what created the sound. Otherwise, she probably never would have known what was going on under there.
Well, tell us some more about some of the unusual things that may happen at a time like this, particularly when it gets very hot.
Yeah. Well, this one interesting thing, which many people might not realize, is that there actually are some animals that do benefit from heat. And, for example, people sometimes have bats in their attic, and we tell them this is not a bad thing as long as they're not getting into the inside of your home. It's great to have them in the attic because they will do free mosquito control for you every night. And, you know, it's wonderful. They can really make a dent in this mosquito population. But bats actually prefer hot temperature, like between 80 and 100 degrees. And little brown bats, which are sometimes in people's attics, actually seem to prefer temperatures over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, the heat spell is something they revel in, whereas other animals like us and any fur-bearing animal definitely are not happy about it. One other funny story we had, again, so many of our funny stories pertain to raccoons. We had a situation where there was a raccoon family in a chimney, and the homeowner, you know, we talked about it, and I explained to him how the babies would leave with the mother when they were 6 weeks old. She'd carry them out once and for all so that they could go on outings with her, and how it was hard for them to go up and down the chimney by themselves because they were too little. So that's why the mother, when they're big enough to go out on outings with her, she moves them to a ground den. So I told the homeowner, you know, don't worry, all you have to do is just wait, and at 6 weeks old, they'll be gone. And so the homeowner was happy to do it, and I said, just keep your damper closed, and when this is all done, get a chimney cap if you don't want them to come back next year. So he said, fine. And he did everything I suggested, except he forgot about the damper part. And he called me back, and he said, the weirdest thing is happening. He said, I'm a fish connoisseur, whatever fish people are who have exotic fish. He had 25 tanks of exotic fish. And he said, my fish are disappearing. Is there any disease you know of, or what's going on? And I didn't realize right away that he was the same caller who had called me about the raccoon. So we were trying to figure out why his fish might be disappearing. And suddenly it dawned on me what was happening. And I said, did you do everything I suggested with the raccoons? Did you close the damper? And he went, whoops, no, I didn't. And so he stayed up that night, and he watched. And sure enough, he said, Mama raccoon came down, went right over to the fish tank, got herself a nice little drink, and then went fishing, caught a whole bunch of his fish. He said the most expensive one she went for and got. Uh-huh. And she just very neatly, because he had a couch up against the aquarium. She very neatly just did her fishing and drinking, and then went back in the chimney and took care of her cubs. Wow. And he got such a chuckle out of it that I think in the end he did not close the damper, because it became so much fun for him to watch her come down and
hopefully
go fishing.
Hopefully he switched to some other species of fish at $19.95 or $29.95 for an exotic.
Exactly.
That can be an expensive habit, you know?
Exactly.
That's a great story.
It was hysterical, but when he called again, he never identified himself as the same caller. He just said, you're animal people, you're the Humane Society. Why would my fish be disappearing, and, you know, what's going on here? He thought there were mice or something in the house that was having an impact. So that was just a funny story.
Yeah, it is good, yeah.
A lot of what we do is detective work, and you know, wild animals, just their behaviors make sense, and we just have to put together the pieces.
Well, that's fascinating detective work. Yeah, as we think about this issue of heat and the urban wildlife, just go ahead and give us a kind of a cross section of the animals that people probably aren't noticing, but that are common in the urban areas, just because I think people, once they go, oh, yeah, that's interesting, I probably could learn to see some of these animals and be aware of them, give them a sense of what they're really surrounded by.
Okay. Well, in most urban areas, I mean, you'll have, are you in California?
I'm in San Diego.
I know in your area there's a variety of ground squirrels, but in our area we have chipmunks, which make small holes in yards, and they tend to live in stone walls and areas of edge where forest meets lawn. And people will often see them. They're very cute, and they do a lot of chirping and disappearing, and they're very vocal. But people don't always like the holes they see in their yard, but then when they associate them with the creature that they enjoy seeing, then they usually enjoy them much more. The fun thing about woodchucks, you'll see them with bulging cheeks. They load up their pouches with food, and so they're kind of comical looking. Gray squirrels are probably the most common animal that people get to see in their yards and parks, and even in the middle of the most urbanized areas, you'll have a hardy population of squirrels if you have any green space at all. Wild rabbits tend to be more and more common, and people tend to not see them so much because they're pretty secretive, but in the summer months, like now, people will be mowing the lawn and encounter their babies, their nests, because the mother rabbit doesn't stay with her young. She just parks them in a hole with long grass, and lawnmowers tend to discover them, and that's how people know they have rabbits in the neighborhood. Raccoons are very common, and people tend to know about them when their trash cans get upended, but they are taking advantage of attics and chimneys, and just about any place there's a niche, a raccoon will try and fill it. Skunks are pretty common in this area, and they are People often don't know they're around till they smell them, till their dog tangles with them, but we have great solutions for that. Bats tend to be in attics everywhere, and most people never know about bats in their attic until they might go outside at dusk and suddenly see bats flying around and then swooping into a very small hole or vent in their house. So often people can be living with lots of wildlife in and under their houses and yards and trees, and they never know about them. Even if you go out at night and you take a flashlight and sort of shine it up in the trees, you might see glowing eyeballs looking back at you, and that's raccoons usually. Their eyes are very fluorescent and in the nighttime, and they will glow back at you. But, you know, they'll often be so quiet you'll never know. They're in the tree right next to your porch. But what we try and teach people is that there's lots of wildlife around you, but they're not harmful. They're just doing their thing, and if you, you know, aren't aware of them, they still might be there, and that's a good thing, you know. So try and look for them more and listen in the early morning to the incredible bird life you get in the most urbanized areas. It's incredible. Green space, even teeny pockets of it, will bring you a lot of wildlife. Particularly, it's interesting if you supply some water, because greenery and water are all many wild animals need, and they appear out of nowhere. Fox in the middle of New York City. People say, how'd he get there? We recently had a couple coyotes go into central Manhattan. Nobody knows how they got there, but they'll get there time and time again because they're eking out a living and we're not giving them much space to live in, but they'll take advantage of the little scraps we do give them.
I was driving along last Saturday, early in the morning, and I live in North County, San Diego, and so it's quite a bit of green. And all of a sudden, walking across the road was a coyote, a little skinny, scrawny. It's startling because it's thrilling. Quite honestly, it's thrilling.
It is.
To see these animals, and he looks at me, and there's some sort of communication where he's kind of going, you're going to be cool, right? And then he wandered off, and I was, you know, it filled me with something that was so terrific. It's wonderful.
It is wonderful.
And as you say, it's funny, too, because the other night I woke up, and I had heard someone talking about the fact that birds, the sound of animals actually is distributed. They're not all talking on top of each other. So at night, I went out about midnight and started listening to the night bird calls, and I'll encourage all of my listeners to do this. Pay attention and realize that they're taking turns. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
When you realize that they're actually, one bird will go off for a while and no other birds will be calling. And then all of a sudden a different bird or other creature will make noises, and they literally share the sound space, which is fascinating.
It is fascinating. And they're actually, what people don't realize is that they're talking to each other. There's communication going on. It's not just everybody yelling at once. It's actual communication going from one animal to another, and it's absolutely fascinating. And, you know, things like, as you're saying, coyotes. An animal is wild as a coyote. There he just pops up and looks at you, and, you know, you form this rapport. It's just this incredible energy and empathy and connection to wildlife and the sort of the wilderness, the little bit that exists that you can have in a second of time just seeing an animal like that. And a lot of people out here tend to see coyotes in a different light because they all read The Big Bad Wolf and the fairy tales, and they think these animals were out to get them. Whereas we explain to people, you know, what coyotes are primarily looking for are mice. And, you know, if they look at you, it doesn't mean they're about to attack you. Right. They're just interested in you. They're looking at you like you're looking at them. But, you know, what they prey on is a whole different story. It's much smaller prey items that are far more helpless, and that humans are very safe from coyotes.
Well, I'm prejudiced because I consider these my friends. I always get the sense, and I approach wildlife with the idea that they actually are begging for us to just get along and cohabit. I think that's their natural inclination. I mean, it's so rare that any wild creature, unless they're provoked or they're diseased or traumatized, would attack humans. It's just very rare. What we're talking about is cohabiting with the creatures, and a lot of people that I know, when they find the creatures in their yards, they end up, you know, calling someone to come and remove it. What's your take on that from the perspective of the Humane Society?
Okay, we generally do not support or recommend removal of wildlife as a way to solve problems, and I'll explain why. The biggest problem is that during spring and summer, that's the birthing season for most wild animal species, and that's when they go in and under people's homes to have private cavities to raise their young. So this is the time of year when the worst thing that can happen is for the mother to be trapped out and her babies left behind to starve. And so we strongly discourage trapping for that reason, because when a person, say, goes and rents a trap or buys a so-called humane trap, they often trap out the mother, and whether they relocate her or kill her, they leave babies behind that normally starve. I mean, it's just a bad scene. Plus, the other terrible thing is that there's a new industry right now, a wildlife extermination industry that has grown up in the past decade or so. And it's one of the fastest growing industries out there. And these are people who will come to your home, and for hundreds of dollars, they will trap and remove wild animals for you. And some of them will kill them, some relocate them. But the outcome is the same. It's really not good for the animals, and in many cases it's a very sad outcome. And it's not the approach we want to see. What we tell people instead is the problem is not that the animal is in your home. The problem is that there's food or a denning site there, and that's where you need to solve the problem. So if you're attracting animals to your home because you're leaving out garbage or dog food or cat food, you have to change your own garbage disposal practices, or stop putting dog food and cat food out all night if you don't want to attract certain animals. And likewise, if you've got holes in your house, you are going to have animals in there with young. So the trick is to do a great home proofing job in early spring and go around your house on the inside and the outside and plug up any holes, because if your house has a chimney cap and you've got no holes in your house, then you're not going to have animals in your house. So that's the answer. And when we get calls from people who, say, have a raccoon family in the attic, the first thing we try and do is see if they'll give the animal a grace period. Let the mother raise her young until they're big enough, and then allow them to leave on their own. And at that point, the person needs to close off the entry hole. So a lot of people are willing to accept that, but some people really don't want that animal in their home no matter what. They want them out now. And in those cases, we teach people how to evict animals, meaning teaching the mother that the nesting, denning place she has chosen is no longer safe. And when we harass her, or when the homeowner, we teach the homeowner how to harass her properly, the mother will move her own babies out. And that's the most humane solution, because it's not trapping and removing animals and separating them from their mother. It's getting the mother to move her own babies out on her own. And often we'll use lights or different bad sounds, smells, different kinds of techniques to teach the mother this is no longer a place where you're welcome. But we always, always, always tell the person that getting the animal out is not the answer. If you don't want them to return, you have got to do that final act of home proofing, and that may mean putting a chimney cap on your flue or sealing up holes, but when the animal is gone, the problem's not gone.
It's educating the animal. These animals are very intelligent,
right,
and they know when they're not wanted.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, we have some comical situations, like we've dealt with a number of, speaking of water, situations where raccoons, you know, are taking advantage of boats because people aren't using or haven't been using them much, and so the raccoons take over and they have their young on boats, and, you know, they love it. They go down the dock at night and bring the kids with them, but then suddenly a person's out on his boat and here's a raccoon, a mama raccoon behind them. So animals will pop up in a lot of strange places, but if you tell mom this is not a place where you're welcome, she will move on. And that is the best answer, but trying to trap and remove her or kill her is just unnecessary. Plus, to pay somebody hundreds of dollars to do it is just crazy.
And quite honestly, you know, an interesting thing for people to try is when you run across animals like that, literally talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Try to I know it sounds a little odd, but mm-hmm. you know what? They are trying to read you. They're trying to figure out what you want.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
as you know, if you communicate to them that this is not a good place, they can tell by the sound of your voice that you're not, you know, they're very perceptive. That's just so fascinating.
Yeah.
Now we'll wrap this up at this point.
Sure.
And it's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
For people, and let's get back to the topic of the excessive heat, let's say people come across a wildlife creature mm-hmm. who they think is somehow being stressed by this situation one way or another. What should they do?
Yeah. Well, if they want to temporarily put out a pan of water, you know, as long as they don't just leave it out permanently, I think that can just help an animal get through a very heat-stressed time. And usually there's enough shelter for wildlife and even enough water that they really don't have to worry about them. If there's any water in a habitat, usually animals know about it, but certainly in the worst heat waves, if they put out a shallow pan of water for wildlife, you know, and I say shallow because, you know, mice and other animals jump into deeper pans and drown, but if they put out a shallow pan, that can help an animal get by for a few days or a week until the cooler weather and normal rainfall will occur. But I know in your area, animals are very well adapted to so little rain and water that I think that most of the time they're doing just fine if we just leave them alone.
Well, I mean, if you're driving along, let's say you're walking and you see an animal that looks as if it's in trouble,
mm-hmm.
What would you recommend?
Well, if it's in trouble, it's probably in trouble because it's injured or orphaned or something else is wrong. And you can always call your state Department of Natural Resources or Nature Center to locate a wildlife rehabilitator who can usually help out, or at least answer your questions.
Well, Laura Simon, Field Director of the Urban Wildlife Program with the Humane Society of the United States, this has been just fabulous. You have a fun job, and you're doing some great work.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure, too. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye now.
Mm-hmm, bye. You have to admit we are getting plenty of warnings that it's time, actually way past time, to make some changes so that we can somehow manage to get along between nations and religions and between we humans and the mystery of the living world that is doing its best to sustain life on Earth. Things are heating up. Let that be the warming. It's time to cool it down a notch or two and get back to the peace we all deserve. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News.